Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books, an independent New Orleans bookstore. Additional support comes from the University of Louisiana Lafayette Press and the Hellas Foundation. Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, your weekly look at the Louisiana literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week, I'll be talking with Lisa Harrington, director of the Bayou Writers Club, which has more than 300 members. We'll also talk with Brad Vogel of the Walt Whitman Initiative. Lisa Harrington has a lot of plates in the air. She's a wife, mother of three, author of four books for women and young adults, and she's the director of the Bayou Writers Club, which has more than 300 members. That's astounding. Today, we're talking about how she balances it all and how you can get involved in a writer's group. Lisa Harrington, welcome to The Reading Life.
Thank you for having me.
You had this successful career in medical sales. And so what made you turn to writing and managing this writer's group?
Well, personally, we were in a good place for me to retire from medical sales, which entailed me traveling all the time.
Of course.
And having children, I felt the need to truly be there for them and all of their school activities. So it was just the perfect timing in our lives. Mm-hmm. But I had always been a writer. When I would travel for work, I would sit in a hotel late at night. Mom of three who's used to being home with children, had nothing else to do. So I would write. And I never had any intentions of sharing it with anyone. And then I challenged myself with writing a novel. And once I did it, I thought, oh, gosh, what can I do with this?
Mm-hmm.
So
you're all about the challenges. That's something you really believe is crucial for a writer, to set those challenges for yourself.
Absolutely. And probably it's just my nature. That's probably why I was successful in sales. I love the challenge. I like to have a number out there.
Mm-hmm.
And it certainly works in the writing world.
So the writing came first before
Absolutely.
The writing group.
Okay. Absolutely.
So how did those things unfold?
Well, funny enough, my mother handed me a folder of all the stories I had written her probably a few years ago, and I had no idea they had saved them. But when I say I've been writing my whole life, truly, before I could spell very well, and when I drew a lot of pictures to go along with the writing, I've been writing. And I would catch myself. I would come out of an appointment, and I would have dialogue from characters in my head or something really clever to say. And I would write on the back of receipts or on the back of paperwork that's supposed to go to a client because I just had to get it out of my head. So I've truly been a writer for a very long time.
Oh, but what a gift that your mother kept all those things.
Absolutely. It's so funny to read.
I bet. So when did you decide to start the Bayou Writers Club?
Once I quit working, I went to New York using all those great travel miles and everything I had, and went to the Writer's Digest writing conference.
Mm-hmm.
And it was such a moving experience. It was a lot of fun as a writer. I had just finished a novel, didn't know what I wanted to do with it, but they had workshops, they had agents you could meet with. And the one thing that I got out of it more than anything was the peer group that I met.
Right.
I went there alone and left with some lifelong writer friends. It was just moving. And I kept thinking, I just need to find my tribe.
Mm-hmm.
Where do I find people like this at home? And so I came back, and my husband was on meetup.com looking for something and had found a group called the Bayou Writers Club that was coming up, and he thought I would be interested. So there was a lovely lady that lived here who had the idea and started the meetup. I joined, went to the meeting. There were seven people, and she and I met and talked, and we're kind of in the same place with our writing. She'd finished a book but hadn't published, and immediately said, oh, I need a co-manager. And I agreed, and then she didn't come back.
Oh, no!
And she had some things in her personal life and ended up moving out of state. But I took it over and thought, well, when she comes back, but true, it just became my group immediately.
So right away, there was a promotion.
And it was just incredible, the talent and just those few people. And it just started growing from there. And I just really took my lead from what their needs were and what my needs were. And they all just seemed to be met every time we got together. It was incredible.
But now, more than 300 people.
Oh, yes. And almost 6 years now.
Yeah.
So it is, it's right at, I think, when I checked a week or so ago, I get notices when people join. I think we're at 349 at the moment. And it is incredible. And it is such a moving experience. You hear so many things in the media, not to get political, but about how diversity doesn't work and how people are just against, you know, different types of people. I have people from every walk of life and every genre you can imagine. I mean, someone that's writing a textbook for their medical practice to someone who's writing sci-fi and works in the tech world. What do they have to talk about? And they're best friends. You have the soccer mom who writes when her kids are at school. You have the homeschool mom who writes when her kids are asleep. You have the retired oceanographers. You have the attorneys. And they're all accountability partners and writing partners. It's really something incredible to see. And when you come to the meeting, I'm always nervous because when new members come in, I don't want them to think we're all just such a close-knit friend group that they aren't welcome.
Right.
I have to remind them every meeting we have new members. I remind them that none of us knew each other before we joined the group.
Reach out. Reach
Absolutely.
Out.
And the other members do. So I definitely co-mingle some of our charter members around the room so that they're always sitting next to someone who has just group experience.
Mm-hmm. What do you find the greatest need is? I mean, we're so far away from the centers of publishing here in Louisiana. And that, to me, is what stumps a lot of writers.
It truly does. And the industry is so confusing. If you're a new writer and you're coming in, there's so much information about being a traditional writer or an independent author where you publish everything on your own and everything in between. You need someone to help hold your hand because you have different needs. Mm-hmm. There are some writers that truly could never do this except for traditionally. We have some writers that only want to control everything and be independent writers and publishers. Then you have the writers that have enormous talent that just want to do it for themselves and for their families. And so I think the greatest need, and we fulfill that very well in our group, is knowing what you want out of your writing and what your goal is, and then how to meet that goal. Because there are some writers that truly just want to publish something so that their family can buy this book.
Right.
Then you have the writers that want to do it independently and have no idea how to make the end product look as professional as a traditional product.
Which is so important.
It is the most important thing. We have millions of people publishing out there. And how do you set yourself apart, or how do you blend in with the traditional books? And it's very hard. It's hard to explain to people that there's the writing and then there's the business of writing. Mm-hmm. And we actually have segments within our meetups where we talk about the business of writing, and I'll even have speakers come in and talk about the business of writing. So we've got some book editors, some publishers, and we also have cover artists that will talk to the group.
Because so often, if you're a writer, you don't have those visual skills.
Absolutely. Or you don't know where to go to find an independent editor. How important is it to have your work edited? And if you're looking online, it can be very dangerous for you because there are lots of people out there saying they're editors, and for the low price of $1,500, they'll check out your manuscript for you.
Uh-huh. And mark a few commas.
Absolutely.
So geographically speaking, where do your members come from?
Okay, so I used to meet on the North Shore and the South Shore, and it just became such a big animal that especially to find a place large enough for the group that wants to meet. Mm-hmm. So I've pretty much settled on the North Shore at a lovely little restaurant called Swazdi and the English Tea Room in Covington.
Yes.
And other than that, people will come from New Orleans, from Baton Rouge. I have someone from Thibodeau. I have some people coming from Mississippi. So I would say people are willing to drive an hour to an hour and a half to come see us.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And that is incredible. Some of those people are every 2 weeks, they are there. And if they can take off work a little bit early, they'll call me and we'll meet up and have coffee or do something. So.
Were you surprised by how many writers were out there?
I was not only surprised by how many, but the talent is incredible. And I don't know if there's something in the water, if it's – I have no idea. It feels like we are just kind of – we're close to the Mississippi Delta. Mm-hmm. We have all the incredible genius from New Orleans. And everybody just meets up. And you would not believe the reading events that we do quarterly. The owner of the Tea Room tells me every time, they're just getting better and better. And he will sit behind the desk and listen, and the wait staff will even tell me, oh my gosh, that one was so good. And for the most part, I would say half of them are not published at all.
So you have impartial judges.
Oh,
they're listing all
the time. Absolutely. And I just sit back because we allow sharing at the end of every meeting, mm-hmm. and 1,000 words or less. People will come in and share their work. And it could be something, just a short story. It could be something larger they're working on, an excerpt from that. And they will read. And the whole room will be in tears because of the story. Or the whole room will be laughing because of the story. You will see just a complete reaction from the group. Everyone is so involved.
Mm-hmm. Do you think every writer needs a writer's group?
I absolutely think every writer needs a writer's group. And you get different things from it. I don't think that everyone gets the same thing from a writer's group, but where else are you going to find your people? Who mm-hmm. else are you going to talk to about it? My favorite story to tell is my characters talk to me. I have a very analytical husband and children. My husband's an engineer by trade and education, and all of my kids are math kids.
Oh, wow.
So I would be extremely in my own head and writing something down, and they're like, what are you doing? And I'm like, oh, these characters will not stop talking to me. I've got to just get this out of my head. And they would just laugh and, you know, didn't really get it.
Yeah, that's mom.
Right. Well, and until you're around other writers, when you tell them this story, they're like, oh, my gosh, the same thing has happened to me. So I think you definitely need other writers because they can commiserate. They can encourage. They can have a cup of coffee with you.
In your hour of need.
Absolutely. We beta read for each other. We hold each other accountable. We call them accountability partners and writing partners in our group. But we definitely meet up, and they're not all writing the same types of things, but they meet a need for each other. So I think that you can meet your needs through your writing group.
That's words to live by.
Thank you.
We've been talking with Lisa Harrington, who is the founder and manager of the Bayou Writers Club. If you'd like to get involved, check it out on Facebook or meetup.com. You can meet Lisa at the 2019 Tennessee Williams Festival, when she and Tad Bartlett of the Podunk Writers Alliance will give a masterclass session on how to start and maintain a writing group. Check out TennesseeWilliams.net to sign up for that. Lisa, thank you so much.
Thank you, Susan.
It's a great pleasure to welcome Brad Vogel to The Reading Life. Brad's a graduate of Tulane Law School and previously served with the National Trust for Historic Preservation in New Orleans. Now he's the director of the New York Preservation Archive Project. He serves on the board of the Walt Whitman Initiative, which is helping to coordinate nationwide celebrations for Whitman's 200th birthday this year. Brad will be giving a lecture about Whitman's time in New Orleans February 17th for the Louisiana Landmark Society. Brad Vogel, welcome to The Reading Life.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's an absolute pleasure to join you today.
So tell me a little bit about your work with the New York Preservation Archive Project. What do you do with that?
Sure. It's an interesting organization, but it's something very dear to my heart, and that's all about telling the value of historic preservation and making sure that people realize here in New York, as much as change is always a part of New York City, there's a reason why certain neighborhoods and landmarks still exist today here, and that's because of the work of historic preservationists. So we do oral histories, We put on exhibits, programs, basically trying to tell that story of why do we still have Grand Central Station today, and why did we lose Penn Station back in the day? It's important when you get that story out to people, they do start to see the broader picture.
And you even get people to go kayaking on the Gowanus Canal, I think.
Yes, that's something I love to do on my spare time. There's a super fun site here in New York called the Gowanus Canal, and I'm part of a canoe club whose mission is to continue to keep the public and the EPA focused on cleaning up that canal.
And that was a place where many artists lived as well. That has real value.
Yes, absolutely. And Walt Whitman himself actually mentions the Gowanus in one of his poems. So it does all tie together.
It does.
Another.
So how did you first become interested in Walt Whitman? And then how did you get involved with the initiative?
So I started writing poetry in fourth grade, and I had a very special teacher, Mrs. Schultz, who encouraged me in that way. And I continued to write poetry all the way through, took a few courses in college. And along the way, I became aware of Walt Whitman as this sort of founding figure of American poetry. And, you know, I have to admit that I always saw him as a famous figure, but I didn't know him very well as a poet. I wouldn't say I was an expert on Walt Whitman. But in the summer of 2016, I learned from the NYC LGBT Historic Sites Project that Whitman's only remaining home in New York City was not landmarked or protected or really even officially or publicly recognized in any way. And I was shocked. I could not believe it. When I think of places in New Orleans where someone like William Faulkner, where he lived in the French Quarter,
right,
or some of the jazz greats, there's attempts around the city to recognize that famous person's involvement in the culture of the place. And Whitman lived in New York and in Brooklyn more than he lived anywhere else.
Right.
But there's no plaque, there's no landmark status. And so I said, you know what, I will kick myself if in 10 years this house gets demolished.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't done anything to try to recognize it or raise awareness about its importance, because Whitman lived at that house when he first published Leaves of Grass, which, as you know, is probably certainly his most famous work and probably the most famous or well-known work of American poetry. So it is special.
Well, and so the Whitman Initiative is telling Whitman's story across the country in this important year. I love that Walt Whitman was one of those writers, like so many, who passed through New Orleans, and he did that for 3 months in 1848. So tell us a little bit about his time here.
Right. And many people forget that foray when Whitman very briefly went down with his brother Jeff. 1848, so this is in the aftermath of the Mexican-American War, and Whitman comes down to New Orleans to edit and start a newspaper called the Daily Crescent. And during this time, he really has a pivotal experience, because many scholars indicate that before he goes to New Orleans, that Whitman could not have written Leaves of Grass. And somehow he's transformed when he's in New Orleans and comes back the person who's capable of writing this bold, new, expansive, uniquely American form of poetry. And some speculate that it's because of an encounter he had where he fully came to recognize his own sexuality in New Orleans, but others just point to the general milieu of the city that he would encounter. This was a place where he was first seeing slavery firsthand. He was seeing all sorts of ethnic, racial, class diversity. And so I see this as a crucial element of Whitman's poetry, in that he goes to New Orleans and he comes back with a broad enough sense of what America is and what human beings are. And you'll see in his poetry over the decades, it's always about human connectedness.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that was probably the crucial change, that Whitman begins to see himself in others, in a much wider range of people when he's in New Orleans.
And that's happened for many writers. I've interviewed lots of people, and it strikes me as so interesting when someone says, and then I got to New Orleans and I got to be myself. That's something that still happens, you know?
It does. And, you know, the funny thing is, part of why I'm going down in February to actually participate and to give this lecture is because I myself moved to New Orleans post-Katrina and felt that exact same thing that you just mentioned,
mm-hmm.
An ability to see a broader sense of the world and to become oneself.
What is it? It's magic. You know,
it
it's old-fashioned magic, I think, sometimes.
And you know, you have Whitman in his reminiscing and his brother's letters back home to New York talking about the places they go, like the French Market,
mm-hmm.
or the wharves along the riverfront, because they, you know, they arrive by steamboat. And they just talk about the range of people and the idiosyncratic sort of take on life that one can find in New Orleans. And what I found when I lived there was a sense that people want you to be more fully yourself, so that the communal life is better, more interesting, and is lifted overall. And I get the sense from the little notes that Whitman drops is he's seeing individuals walking along the street, in the markets, in the fine salons of some of the fancy hotels and exchanges, and it's changing him. He's seeing that it is possible to be more fully and more authentically himself.
Mm-hmm. What are the places you associate with him in New Orleans? Are there any landmarks really left?
Really, unfortunately, there are not too many left. He and his brother stayed in some boarding houses right around St. Charles Avenue and Poydras Street.
And they stayed at the Fremont Hotel, which is
right.
Long gone too.
Correct. And he was known to haunt some of the, you know, the bar rooms and the exchange rooms in the St. Charles Hotel, also the very famous St. Charles Theater, where he actually saw Zachary Taylor, the future president, who had just come back from the Mexican-American War. And it sounds as if he was not too impressed with the character that Zachary Taylor cut amidst the opera finery. But he also does witness slave auctions, and so that also plays into his overall take. And you can see that thread through some of his later work.
Mm-hmm.
But Whitman ultimately is someone who likes to wander. And so you can sense from the letters that his brother Jeff writes back home that he is all over the city and he is absorbing it. He is taking it in. He is seeing the street life and the color of the place.
Well, this is a great town for walking. Writers have always celebrated that, that's for sure. So what are some of the other events taking place for this bicentennial around the country?
Right, so that is the fun part.
The lecture sounds pretty fun to me, I must say.
Right, right. The lecture is going to be fun, I assure you. This is just one part of a much broader effort across the country to recognize Whitman, to celebrate Whitman, and to make sure that people know about this great, great American poet, because it is 200 years since he was born in 1819, and his poetry still speaks to us today. It's still so relevant. It's all about what connects us. He has this great line from his poem Crossing Brooklyn Ferry that's called, "What is it then between us?"
Mm.
And I think he's searching. He's searching for this, what is the nature of the connection or the lack of connection between you and me, whoever that person might be. So there are going to be events in, many events in New York, tons of events in Philadelphia and Camden, which is another place where Whitman lived in Camden, up until he died in 1892, and then out in Huntington, Long Island, where Whitman was born, and a good number in D.C., because you'll recall that Walt Whitman also served as a nurse for Civil War soldiers when they were convalescing after battle. He even went so far as to write letters home for them,
right,
to their family members, which is just a fascinating side story as well.
Wouldn't you love to have him at your ideal dinner party? I think he would be a terrific guest, don't you?
I think he would be fascinating. And just to go on a jaunt around New Orleans with Walt Whitman, that would be something.
Right. Oh, well, this will be a good time for everyone, I tell you. We've
Absolutely.
Been talking with Brad Vogel of the Walt Whitman Initiative. You can meet him Sunday, February 17th at 5 at 6330 St. Charles Avenue. It's free to Louisiana Landmark Society by admission for others. For more information about the Whitman Bicentennial, you can go to waltwhitmaninitiative.org. Brad, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, and thanks to Louisiana Landmark Society as well.
Great. Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. Here in New Orleans, political strategist Donna Brazile presents the Charles Fry Memorial Lecture, Monday, February 11th at 11 a.m. That's at Southern University in New Orleans at SUNO Center for African and African American Studies at the New Arts, Humanity, and Social Sciences Auditorium, 6400 Press Drive. The topic is, can the Democratic Party continue to usher African Americans into the American mainstream? Diana Watson, a local writer and editor, will lead a newly created writers group. It will be headquartered at the River Ridge Library on Jefferson Highway in River Ridge. It begins Tuesday, February 12th at 7, and it starts at the East Bank Regional Library in Metairie. Then it will move to River Ridge with the fifth session. Nancy Penrose signs A Dream and a Chisel, Louisiana sculptor Angela Gregory in Paris, 1925 to 1928. Tuesday, February 12th at 6 at Octavia Books. Tuesday, February 19th at 6:30 at the Waldenburg Arts Center, Freeman Auditorium, Tulane University. And again, Thursday, February 21st at 6 at Dominican High School. Former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright will be the featured speaker in the next Tulane Aspen Institute Values in America speaker series. That's Tuesday, February 12th from 6 to 7 in Dixon Hall on the Tulane University campus. Tulane Professor of History Walter Isaacson will moderate the discussion, which will center on nationalism, populism, and Albright's new book, Fascism, A Warning. A question and answer session will follow the discussion, and there will be a post-event book signing. Poppy Tooker discusses and signs Pascal's Minnelli Cookbook, A Family Tradition, Tuesday, February 12th at 6 at the Hubble Library in Algiers. Kathy Barron signs her new cookbook, Pie Squared, Irresistibly Sweet and Savory Slab Pies, Tuesday, February 12th at 7 at the New Orleans Jewish Community Center on St. Charles Avenue. Maurice Carlos Ruffin signs We Cast a Shadow, Wednesday, February 13th at 6 at Octavia Books. Brad Vogel of the Walt Whitman Initiative presents a lecture, Walt Whitman in Louisiana, Sunday, February 17th at 5 at 6330 St. Charles Avenue. Free to Louisiana Landmark Society members by admission for others. For more information about the Whitman Bicentennial, go to waltwhitmaninitiative.org. In Mandeville, Mike Fowler signs From the Bronx to the Bayou, A Defense Attorney's Odyssey from Charles Evers to Edwin Edwards and Beyond, Saturday, February 16th at noon at Barnes & Noble, Mandeville. In Baton Rouge, Nancy Penrose discusses and signs A Dream and a Chisel, Louisiana sculptor Angela Gregory in Paris, 1925 to 28. That's Sunday, February 10th at 3 at the East Baton Rouge Parish Library, and Thursday, February 14th at noon at the West Baton Rouge Museum in Port Allen. In St. Francisville, Conundrum Books presents the 2019 Writers and Readers Symposium, which takes place Saturday, February 16th from 9 to 4 at the Hemingbow Convention Center in St. Francisville. Featured speakers are State Poet Laureate Jack Bedell, Jason Berry, Allison Fody Bork, Dima Gawi, C.H. Lawler, and Erica Spindler. This includes a day of presentations and lunch with authors. Tickets are available at bontempstix.com. And looking forward, the Terrebonne Parish Library will host its 16th Jambalaya Writers Festival. That's March 9th from 7:30 to 6 p.m. at the Terrebonne Parish Library, 1515 Library Drive in Houma. It features New York Times bestselling author Beatrice Williams, Carolyn Brown, Elise Arden, Dacre Stoker, Nathaniel Rich, Laura Cayouette, Erica Spindler, Sheba Turk, and others. There will be a pre-festival event Friday, March 8th at 6 at the library. That's featuring Ken Wells, author of Gumbo Life, Tales from the Rue Bayou. For tickets, go to mytpl.org. Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Christwood Retirement Community, the University of Louisiana at Lafayette Press, and the Hellas Foundation. The theme song and end music for The Reading Life are by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by George Engmeyer and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at wwno.org. And you can email us at thereadinglife@wwno.org.